Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi folks, welcome to this Epochs of the Lotus Eaters, where I'm joined by Bo, and this is part two of our Richard the Lionheart series, where we will be talking about Richard the Lionheart on crusade in the Holy Land, as in the good bit. My favourite bit. It's exciting. But I mean, his whole life's exciting. But, right, where did we leave off? You conquered Cyprus, put the false emperor in chains, and then sailed off towards Acre.
Yeah. So we left off just where he sort of landed at Acre, and that scene of devastation it would have been.
Yes.
Sort of a horrific scene where even the Crusader camp was being besieged. And they'd been there for 18 months, nearly 2 years, something like that. The Crusaders, the Franks.
Quick FYI, that's literally what the Muslims called everyone from Europe.
Yeah, you didn't necessarily have to be Frankish.
In the same way we just called them all Saracens.
Yeah, or infidels.
Yeah.
Something like that. So what I thought I'd do is just a super quick recap, just to mention again, the Horns of Hattin, where the Kingdom of Jerusalem, their army under Guy de Lusignan had been sort of tempted out of Jerusalem itself.
And annihilated.
Into the desert, onto these twin peaks at Hattin, and more or less annihilated, yeah. And I'll go into that in a bit more detail later, because I want to talk all about Saladin, the life of Saladin. This episode, I want to make maybe half of it, maybe.
Blimey.
All about the Muslim side of the story and the career and life of Saladin. Because I said in the first one, didn't I, that Richard thought of his life as he's the main character.
Yeah.
In the world.
He very obviously thought that, yeah.
And everyone else is, you know, bit parts in that show. But they have to be sort of great as well in order to reflect greatness back on him. I think that's often the way, isn't it, in history, to have a truly, truly great story. You need sort of a great protagonist. You know, the
great antagonist.
So, you know, someone like Wellington or Nelson is sort of cast in a yet greater light due to how amazing Napoleon was. You know what I mean?
Totally true.
And so this sort of happens with Saladin and Richard, that they're both sort of fantastic personages. And their stories are both so fantastic that they sort of bring each other up in the sort of historical stakes of amazing stories, of amazing biographies.
What I always found interesting about Saladin is it's more his character than his statesmanship or generalship that I'm impressed with, actually. Saladin's okay. He's pretty good.
Well, as a general, you mean?
As a general, as a statesman, right?
Yeah.
But he's not the best, actually. And, you know, he's got a few notable defeats under his belt.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, there are he gets defeated all the time.
Yeah, I know. And there are a bunch of, like, revolts. But he's resilient, you know, and he perseveres through it. And eventually comes out the victor on the other side. Spoiler alert, by the way, for events of 700 years ago. But it's the quality of his character that is really memorable about Saladin and why he's still respected by Christians to this day.
So one of the takeaways is that he's sort of very, very, very clement and merciful and wise and stuff. Sometimes he is, sometimes he's really not that.
Sure,
so
sometimes Richard isn't that either.
That's why I want to do it in a bit of detail, is because, you know, the surface level, the first sort of layer of reading is the things that Muslim chroniclers or modern day Muslims once say is that he's like the most sort of beneficent and the most sort of
noble and forgiving and
sometimes he is, often he's not though.
I think the thing about this, I don't really want to detract from Saladin here, because he didn't have to be at all, you know, like if he'd just been like, right, just kill every Christian we get our hands on, every Muslim would be like, okay, great.
No, that's fine, but then Chronicles just shouldn't pretend that he's perfect afterwards.
Sure, but the point is, he in the times where he is clement, he didn't have to be. And in fact, if anything, this could have been a detraction from on him to the Muslim forces. Like, well, hang on a second. they murder us all the time. Why can't we just kill a bunch of them? And, you know, Marcella's like, no, we're not going to do that. That does show a nobility of character that I think is worthy of praise.
Except the point is sometimes he does just butcher civilians and execute loads of people out of hand.
That is
sort of thing.
Sometimes
so it's not,
he does that.
For example, I don't know, well, I always quite often go to Alexander or Augustus, don't I? But Augustus has got a reputation for being extremely kind and clement, at least in sort of the latter half of his career, when he didn't have to be a triumvir. Well, mostly, but not always.
Yeah.
Sometimes he would order someone buried in there, in the ground up to the neck and their head eaten by ants or something really weird.
Yeah.
You know, so he's still... Okay, so Saladin wasn't like Genghis Khan. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good start.
Yeah, it's a good start, but, you know, don't make out like he's a saint.
I'm not saying he's a saint, but... I think he does a lot of things.
He's a warlord. He's a warlord still.
Yeah, of course he's a warlord. But everyone of this time's a bloody warlord.
Mm.
You know, anyone of any note really is a warlord. So like that's hardly a black mark against his character. And there are loads of things that he doesn't have to do, but does because he thinks they're the right thing to do. And actually, you know, I think that's mildly worthy of praise.
No, yeah, I'll give him credit when it's due.
Hmm.
But I'll point out when he's not this saintly type, perfect magic granddad type figure.
Sure, that's definitely true.
Yeah. I mean, for example, he died almost penniless.
Yeah.
He was sort of a sultan of Egypt and Syria, one of the most powerful, if not the most powerful person in the Near East, Middle East. And he died without any real personal fortune. You know, there you go. Right there, that says something about the person.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's to his credit. You know?
That was a point in his favour, that he wasn't...
I wasn't sure if you were condemning him.
No. That's great. He wasn't avaricious for himself or anything. But okay, so we left off at Acre.
Hmm.
So I mentioned when Richard's ships first sort of sail up to Acre, which is right on the coast, there's a massive supply ship, a Muslim one, meant to be resupplying Acre, because Acre's still being held by the Muslim forces. And he sees it and boards it straight away and sort of pilfers it and then sets fire to it and sinks it. And historians have looked back, or I think Muslim chroniclers at the time said, that moment sort of, that was a really big moment strategically, from the point of view of the Muslim side, that from that point on, they really needed that supply ship badly.
But yeah, after 18 months of being besieged and your only supply comes from sea and that's intercepted, the Muslim garrison of Acre is definitely going to feel that.
Yeah, they were doomed.
Yeah.
Sort of doomed by that point. So it's quite quickly, within a few weeks of Richard turning up, that he... gets everything sort of sorted out, really. Yeah.
Immediate impact.
Because, you know, we've said it before and we'll say it many more times in this and the next episode. If there's one thing Richard is good at, it's sieging a castle.
Because that's basically what medieval warfare was in Europe at this point.
Yeah.
Very few large field battles, lots of small sieges of not very important places, frankly.
Yeah. So he saw, and also the Crusaders had suffered from where there's more than one person trying to be in control. And like a lot of these things, you really, really want one mind controlling it.
Yes, but the problem that we have here is there's a formal system of rank and hierarchy that is underpinned by a series of gargantuan egos and no clear ability for anyone to establish a legitimate pecking order.
Yeah. Well, until Richard turns up.
Well, he doesn't even establish a legitimate pecking order. He just says, I'm Richard and I'll fight everyone, basically. And everyone's like, okay, I don't actually want to fight the guy. So Richard's ego basically presses him into first place. But this offends everyone else in his coalition. But he ends up essentially alienating them all and causing them all to go home.
Well, I mean, part of that is, of course, true. But he is a king. The only other king there is Philip.
Yeah.
Well,
Maybe, wasn't it Leopold of Austria or something? The vassal of the Holy Roman Emperor.
Yeah, so he wasn't a king.
Sure, he wasn't a king, but he's still someone important. Richard disrespects him.
So if you think of maybe like an officer corps in the mess of an officer corps, you would have everyone's supposed to be a type of equal. It's supposed to be like, you know, the common room at a university or something. No one's formally exactly the boss of anyone else.
Yeah.
But a general is superior to a captain at the same time. So it's a bit like that. So if you're the king, if you're a king, he's definitely above Leopold.
I'm not saying he's
and
not.
Yet it's also supposed to be, on some level, they're supposed to treat each other with complete respect and on some level be equals, although they're not. It's, you know.
The thing is, it's one thing Richard being like, I'm a king, therefore I'm above you, which is obviously true. But it's another thing, like, at one point he rips down one of Leopold's standards.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you know, maybe you don't want to do that. You know, because he is going to take like the 5,000 men he's got and go home.
Mm.
You know, maybe they would have been useful. Never mind. You know, it's not, like I said, it's not that these things aren't true on paper or anything like that. It's just they're not clever moves to make. And they're not germane to controlling and commanding a coalition force that actually doesn't have to be there if it doesn't want to.
That's the key point. It's a coalition effort.
Yeah.
So that event where he rips down Leopold's flag from the walls of Acre after they take Acre, Richard would have argued, and other people have argued, that Leopold was in the wrong for doing that in the first place.
Oh.
Richard wasn't... Richard was doing the correct thing, really.
Which is why Leopold stayed and was like, good point, Richard, you're right.
Yeah, no,
he went home.
It pissed off Leopold so much that he went home.
Yeah.
And in the next episode, it's Leopold that imprisons... Yes. Richard on the way home. So it was
spoiler alert again.
Politically, it was a really bad move. We said
it was
in the
really
first
stupid.
One, Churchill said that Richard was politically a child.
Yes, which is totally true.
Yeah.
And this is one of those really great examples because Leopold's men took this section of the wall or whatever, which is why they put up his standard. Let him have it. You know, it's not like what would be the reason to? Oh no, I'm taking that down. Why we took this? Yeah, well, I'm King Richard. Okay, Richard.
No, but I mean, I think it'd probably be a bit more than that. It's like, well, if you let that slide, it's one of those things. It's like, there's sort of protocol here.
Yeah, but this goes both ways because, you know, if
that's
you,
politics for you, isn't it? It's a difficult decision.
It is, yeah. Because, I mean, there's one thing, like, okay, they've put their banner up on a section of the wall. Okay, well, you go put your banner up on the citadel then, you know, so your banner is higher than theirs. You're not taking anything away from them, but you still stand. Anyway, you know. The point being, there are definitely better ways politically to handle this. And Richard's massive ego gets the better of him on every occasion. And I'm not saying he doesn't even deserve to have this ego, because I think if anyone deserves the ego, it's the guy with the biggest empire and who is personally the mightiest warrior. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But they can always just go home, Richard.
Yeah. There's a thing, though, isn't there? It's like a balancing act. It's like... if you let him get away with that, some people, you give him an inch and they take a mile.
Sure.
And it's like, is he going to, if I don't sort of stamp my authority on things, is he going to end up just completely taking the mickey endlessly?
Maybe.
I'm going to look weak. And that's a bad political move as well.
Possibly.
There's that, because that thing about it's a flag, I'll just let him have it. I think, no, it's a big thing. It's like a really big thing.
I'm not saying it's not a big thing.
It's like a fairly big deal to them, anyway.
But even then, there are ways of doing these things. Obviously, Richard didn't approach it in the right way.
Mm.
You know, like, Leopold, I think that might be a bit of an issue. You are just a duke. You know, I am a king. Do you not think? Maybe there could have been some, you know, tete-a-tete over it, but instead Richard just tears it down. It's okay.
Throws it in the ditch, they say.
Yeah. Not even respectfully, right, just like, okay, Richard. Yeah.
Okay, so a quick quote here from Winston Churchill on Acre. He says, quote, "The glamours of chivalry illume the tale of the Third Crusade. All the chief princes of Europe were now in line around the doomed stronghold of Saladin, Acre, rivaling each other in prowess and jealousy. The sanctity of their cause was no bar to their quarrels and intrigues. King Richard dominated the scene, fighting always in the most dangerous places, striking down the strongest foes, Richard fought personally
all the time.
They seem to love it. Yeah. He negotiated all the time with Saladin, or Saladin's brother, actually. An agreement was, in fact, almost reached. To save his garrison, Saladin offered to surrender his Christian captives, to pay a large indemnity, and to give up the cross, a small fragment of the cross. The cross.
The true cross, allegedly.
And to give up the cross captured by him in Jerusalem, on which Christ, though this after 1,200 years may not be certain, had suffered. yeah, it's obviously nonsense. All relics.
It's totally true. Because the legend says it's true.
But the negotiations failed, and Richard, in his fury, massacred in cold blood the 2,000 Saracen hostages he had been delivered as guarantees. Within 5 weeks of the arrival, he brought the 2 year siege to a successful conclusion. So there's a few things there.
Yeah, I mean, we're kind of glossing over the difficulty of actually taking Acre. So there's obviously like fighting the streets, and Richard is like running down streets, gathering hordes of men, and personally charging to the ranks of the Saracens and cutting them up. Like, it's actually wild when you go into the detail of the Siege of Acre. It's like, you are the king. Like, this is so phenomenally dangerous. What are you doing? And yet he comes through it all unscathed, just covered in other people's blood. And it's just like, okay, that's wild. I mean, if you're like the Saracens, you flee out of Acre, and it's like, what happened? The King of England was just hacking everyone up in the streets, and he was like all on his own. And then a couple of his men arrived, and he was like, right, we're going, lads. And it's like, oh my God. Like, you'd be like, what the hell are we dealing with here?
Yeah.
That's a maniac.
A great knight wearing the livery of the King of England. No, the King of England himself. Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, he had a giant bloody Dane axe, and he was hacking people in half. It's like, okay.
There's a thing in history, and it's quite rare, or maybe it's less rare than you might think, but sometimes a leader just actually gets stuck in themselves. I mean, Alexander and Pyrrhus are great examples.
It is quite rare, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, most of the time, it's not the case, Napoleon, Ridley Scott, where it just, you know, most men aren't built for that, really, you know.
Like, Alexander is supposed to have been wounded like 30 times. He was first over a wall a couple of times.
Yeah.
He lead a charge, like the front horse in an arrow-headed cavalry charge. That's Alexander. Pyrrhus would have one-on-one combats with people all the time.
Yeah,
would be involved in actual sword play in battles all the time.
And like all this sort of stuff. But that's actually quite unusual, you know.
Yeah.
Usually it's like, that's phenomenally dangerous, and you'd have to be some sort of hulking maniac to want to do that, let alone be allowed to do that.
Right. And it's more common in the ancient world, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
But even then, still not all that common.
No, it's still phenomenally dangerous. I mean, you wear an armour, but still, it's easy to get killed when you're first into a group of enemy men. I mean, Christ.
And Richard was one of those in that mould.
Yeah.
Where he was... Also, I think it's, obviously, I suppose, not only are you good at fighting and you love fighting, you actually genuinely enjoy it.
It's a passion.
It's more than just you enjoy it. You sort of can't stop yourself almost.
And this is something that comes up over and over with Richard.
And have complete confidence in yourself as well. Yeah. That's the other thing. You know you're good at it.
That's another thing. Because I always think about this, like, okay, say you're pretty good, but surely eventually you're going to come across some other guy who's pretty good as well, and perhaps a bit better than you. You know,
that's the worry, isn't it?
Right. Why wouldn't you be worried about it? Yeah. Like, well, look at him. He's a giant warrior. He's obviously, you know, he's been fighting for 20 years. Well, he might beat me. You know, but Richard just, and like you get the people like Alexander, Pyrrhus, Richard, they just never seem to worry about it. I guess they are the guy.
Richard is the one who knocks.
They are the guy that you come up against. He's this hulking dude who can't be beat.
But, well, I think the psychology of that, like a boxer, or an MMA fighter, your psychology has to be that I'm number one.
Yeah.
You can't really walk in the ring otherwise. Well, you can, but you've nearly already lost. Yeah. The psychology is that I'm the best. Very few fighters have sort of a very nuanced psychology of, I know I'm not the best and I have to be humble, and that's where my greatness comes from. There are some people like that.
Yeah.
But most fighters, especially if they've got an undefeated record, they have to walk in there with, like, I cannot be knocked out. I cannot be beaten. I am the best in the world. That's how they do it. I imagine people like Richard and Pyrrhus had that going on inside their own heads. I don't know, though, of course.
I don't know. That's the thing. Like, I don't know if they think about it that consciously, because I think there's a part of them that's a lot less rational than that. Because it feels, when you're reading about these people, that they're in some sort of Iliad of their own, in their own head.
Right, yeah.
You know, where it's not... I don't even know if they think they can be beat, because they... I think they think it's just not part of the story or something.
Right, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Like, and if I die heroically, then I die heroically. Great, you know. Like, right. It's not even a problem, you know. Right. So I don't know if they think, like the moderns on that. I really don't.
Yeah.
And that's not the impression I get when I'm reading about them either.
Well, no, that but that is explicitly what Alexander thought, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, he was happy to die.
Basically, I'm writing a new Iliad of my own in the East, and I'm Achilles.
Yeah.
In that story, yeah.
Which was kind of true.
Well, yeah. So as you say, yeah, at Acre there was all sorts of street fighting, and it was really very bloody. And in fact, there's lots of, whenever you have a long siege, it's very difficult in the pre-modern age not to end up with all sorts of disease going on.
Oh, yeah, if you don't get dysentery, you're very lucky.
Yeah, or, you know, worse things like cholera, typhus, typhoid, all sorts of horrors, really.
Because there are loads of dead bodies around.
Yeah.
Rotting in the sun.
And loads of piss and shit as well.
Yeah.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
Yeah, it's a disgusting thing.
And they didn't know, I mean, they had a concept of what was sanitary and what wasn't, but they didn't know about the germ theory of disease.
No.
So you didn't necessarily know for sure that if you drink befouled water, that you're going to get dysentery or something.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was some sort of terrible disease, miasma, going around that even Richard got.
Yep.
And he got very, very ill. Very ill. One account is that, like, all his hair and nails fell out at one point.
I'm not sure I believe that, though, because, I mean, what the hell would he have had?
Yeah, what does that? I don't know.
But also, you don't get any comment on his appearance like that later on. Like, you know, it's not like Richard's a weird hunchback, bald, or anything like that, you know.
Well, if you got better, your hair and nails can grow back in, like, a month or two, can't they?
Probably.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
Apparently, he had to be literally carried around on a bier or on a some sort of litter.
And guess what he did during that time?
He was so weak.
Yeah. Guess what he did during that time? He was like, carry me out with a crossbow so I can shoot people on the walls.
Still carry me around so I can at least give orders and things. Yeah.
My lord, can't you just get better? It's like, no.
It reminds me of one story from... From Operation Market Garden, you know, a bridge too far. One colonel, I think, when he was a paratrooper, dropped out of an airplane. When he landed, the parachutes weren't that great back then. You still hit the ground quite hard. He, like, snapped his ankle or his knee or something when he landed. He just ordered one of his men to find a wheelbarrow. And a couple of guys would just wheel him around in a wheelbarrow for the next few days or week or whatever it was. And he's still just giving orders to everyone.
Yeah.
So, like, nothing stops. I don't care that I'm terribly injured. So Richard was just being carried around for a while, but he didn't die of it. And so after Acre, he knows that, you know, he's in a bit of a delicate situation still. Okay, he's won Acre, which is actually quite a big win.
Yeah.
The Crusaders had suffered all sorts of losses for a few years here. Yeah. So this is actually a decent win, showing that Saladin isn't perfect and all that sort of thing. But Richard needs a bit of breathing space. So he wants to make peace with Saladin. And he thinks, again, this is a bit of an ego thing, although maybe just perfectly reasonable. He thinks, if I can just speak to Saladin, if I could have a meeting with him, I'll be able to persuade him. We'll get some sort of connection going.
Yeah.
And we can strike some sort of deal. And but Saladin doesn't want any of that action.
Unfortunately, there was no Donald Trump, Kim Jong-un moment.
Yeah.
With... Richard the Lionheart and Saladin.
They never met in person.
No, they didn't. They didn't. But they knew a lot about each other. Because, of course, why wouldn't you?
Fascinated with each other. Yeah. That happens a lot in history, is that great antagonists never meet each other. So, for example, Hitler and Stalin never met. Queen Elizabeth and Mary Queen of Scots never met, even though most dramas throw in a scene where they do. Yeah. They never met each other.
But it's much better storytelling if they do.
Yeah. Richard and Saladin never met, but yeah, they were fascinated by each other.
You didn't get a Hannibal and Scipio moment.
Yeah, yeah, it would have been a great moment.
Yeah.
But so Saladin sends one of his brothers. Saladin's got a few great brothers that are great sort of generals in their own right. Sends his brother to Richard and they negotiate.
Yeah.
And Richard, they do seem to get on really well with each other.
Yeah,
actually.
Richard's got a great plan here.
Richard does seem to be, if he wanted to turn on the charms,
yeah.
If he wanted to be charismatic, he certainly could be.
But isn't this where he offers his sister to marry him?
Yeah.
Which is a brilliant move. I mean, that would solve it. No, she's not going to do it. And she's just like, no, I'm not marrying a Muslim.
Yeah, some random Muslim prince.
Yeah, no.
How about no thanks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which again, like, makes me wonder how much freedom women had. Maybe actually they had more agency than we give them credit for.
Well, it depends, isn't it? If you're extremely highborn and you've just got enough force of will, like Eleanor of Aquitaine, if you just sort of refuse, or it depends how insistent the men are as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, Richard's probably like, look, the lives of tens of thousands of men depend on you marrying the Sultan's brother, so we can have a peace, and so that we can, you know, go to Jerusalem. And she's just like, no, not marrying a Muslim. It's like,
yeah.
Fair enough.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It was that then.
It would require her to be, I don't know if necessarily convert, but probably convert, but at the very least,
undoubtedly,
become, you know, live her life by sort of Islamic rules.
Which probably weren't that different to Catholic rule at the time.
Well, I
mean, women didn't exactly dress sluttily.
Yeah, probably a bit more than just what you dress. She'd have to go into. She'd have to do all sorts of things that she didn't want to do.
Sure.
And she was already betrothed to somebody else, loved somebody else, and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, that didn't work out. And Saladin wasn't best pleased because Saladin sees this sort of thing going on. He thinks, has my brother been sort of turned by Richard? Or are you making... I never gave you authority to, like, make deals like that and do things like this. And are you going soft on the Crusaders here? What's going on? So, no, it doesn't work anyway.
He's just such a charming guy. Work. I don't know. He offered me a sister. I mean,
Okay, so I want to break the narrative here.
Just a quick thing. That's huge, though, right? Like,
what,
sorry? You're like the Sultan's brother and, you know, this enemy king. Okay, I've got to go treat them. Do you want to marry my sister? Sure. Like that, you can see how I'd be kind of, like, surprised and taken aback. You know?
Yeah, I can throw him on the pile with my 10 other wives.
Yeah, yeah, but like, you know, and this is a huge political move and make him politically a lot more important than he was probably, you know, all this other stuff. Where it's, and you can see why Saladin's like, why are you even countenancing? We're not doing that.
That's why Saladin's not best pleased.
Yeah,
it's
of like, course well, we're not
if anyone's going to marry, if we're going to do anything along those lines, surely it's me that,
exactly.
What did you, wait, what's going on?
Exactly, she's just like, I'm not doing that. It's like, why are we even talking about this? Why is this the conversation? And that's the thing, another part of Churchill's, like, he's a political child. That was never going to happen. You know, it was never going to happen. She was, you know, surely that was never going to happen. And so, again, I just found that episode really amusing. Just, you know, why are we discussing this? How are we going to be killing each other? Anyway.
So quite soon after Acre, Philip decides he's going to go home. He's taken a few slights from Richard, and Richard is obviously... the top dog.
Yeah.
Philip doesn't really like that, and he decides to just go back to France.
Just a quick reminder, Philip Augustus is pretty much the polar opposite of Richard. He's not like him. He doesn't really like him. And I think it's fairly easy to feel overshadowed by Richard in the middle of a crusade.
Mm.
Like, you know, maybe if you're doing court politicking, then obviously you're like, Richard, you fool. Of course... Aladil is not going to marry your sister. But when it comes to, like, you know, leading armies and storming cities, you're probably like, okay, go on then, Richard. You know, it's probably hard to feel like you're not being overshadowed.
Yeah, you know, when there's someone in the room or in a party or somewhere and they're just sort of
loud.
They're alpha mailing it.
Yeah.
Like, but to an obnoxious degree though.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
If it's handled right, it's okay, and you're happy to just let that happen.
Yeah.
But some people, especially if you think you should be the alpha in the room, even quietly or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's like, ugh. Like, I don't want to be near this.
You get the feeling that Philip really dislikes Richard just for being Richard at this point.
Yeah.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.